Welcome to The Life Engineer with Matty J. He unpacks and interviews guests to share the tools, components, and software that's needed to build a life and mindset by design versus one of default.
Welcome to the podcast, Beth. I'm going to let you introduce yourself. I haven't done a podcast for a while, so I feel a little bit like it's not normal.
It's not normal.
Yeah, I've not done a podcast for a while, so I'm coming on. The podcast, and it's a bit like where the hell is my bacon? And Cafe Grit are two things I've got written down. I'll let you explain and introduce them a little bit more. So do you want to just introduce yourself? And
yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Matt. And if you've been away for a while, that means that you're kind of a podcast virgin, so that's good. You're losing your podcast virginity. Yeah. So my name is Beth Campbell. I go by Beth Ann online, and also that's my author name because it sounds a little bit more Southern. I'm living in the South in the U.S. right now. But yeah, I'm an author. I'm actually by day, I'm a project manager and a people manager. And by night, off hours, I write and podcast. So I have a book called Where the Hell is My Bacon? It's a great tale of a triumph in the corporate world. And I do a podcast. It's called Cafe Grit. And it is about kind of calling out corporate BS, and but also finding fulfillment and kind of pursuing our dream career. So that's me.
So when I start looking at this, it's called life engineering. And it's trying to find the components, the tools, the systems and the software to engineer a life by design. And it interests me in digging deeper into stuff because on the surface, it's where's my bacon? So this one conversation about bacon that kicked off a whole load of shit. It's like if clients say, oh, yeah, we separated because she said I didn't put the lid on the toothpaste. Like it's on the surface when I work and talk about gardening on the surface, that's just something that's happened. But beneath it, there's other stuff going on, you know,
and it's exactly
just, it's interesting with this where's the bacon. It's like that sounds like it's about bacon.
And it is, because really, Matt, shouldn't everything be about bacon? I mean, yeah, let's be truthful.
Another conversation,
right? But
bacon,
right? I know I have a whole pound in my refrigerator waiting for me this afternoon, so I'll give you my favorite Szechuan bacon recipe. But yeah, so it's on the surface, it's called Where the Hell's My Bacon? Of course, bacon plays a part of this, but it's really about a corporate team that was going through some really stressful, really horrible times, low morale. They were being outsourced. Organization that didn't, a lot of people in the corporate world, this will resonate, that the organizations that don't make any sense. And in all of this turmoil, you know, that the bacon comes into play. The bacon gets removed from the cafeteria for a health mandate. And even though it's kind of about bacon and there's a lot of bacon humor, the truth is it's really a microcosm of what they were dealing with at the time in the corporate world, which was just this, you know, shitty executive management and lack of trust and lack of communication. And they didn't really know how to speak out about that, or they were afraid to do that. They were afraid of losing their jobs. They were afraid of, you know, getting in trouble, or that they, you know, they weren't on board with the, you know, the directive. So they used bacon. It was just a very serendipitous, timely thing that happened. And they it kind of exploded because they felt like that's what they could use their voice for. It was okay. It was safe. Yeah. Right? Who's going to say anything? It's bacon. I'm just making fun of bacon. I'm just complaining about bacon. Who's going to, you know, no one's going to fire me for that.
Yeah, it's funny. And this is where I'm not a great podcaster. I try and get better. But this flows nicely into my first statement that we was going to talk about, which was speaking out.
Right.
You know, and the power in that. So you naturally have got to a stage, and I always say with coaching, I can't give anything I haven't earned. So you can sit and talk to me about speaking out because you've gone through and you've got skin and depth in the pain in being able to do it. So you can tell people what, and you've seen the benefits in it. So you've done the pain in it. It's a bit like me. Having built a brick wall and understand how to build a brick wall, I can then teach it, but you can't do it unless you own it. And that's speaking out something that you've got and that you've done.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of it's really just an inherent part of me. It's kind of a core quality that I've always been I'm not going to say unafraid. I definitely have fear, but I've always been comfortable and feel like it's necessary. And then I can fairly easily speak out about things that sometimes other people can't for many reasons, fear, or they don't know how, or it's just, you know, not everybody's in your face, Beth Campbell. You know, they have to find other ways to find their voice, but that drives a lot of what I do. I mean, that drove, I was the sort of the instigator in the book, the story in the book, there's a protest that happens, a bacon protest. And there's a whole social media explosion when people were very upset about this removal of bacon. And I was definitely the instigator. I was the orchestrator. So it is something that is a part of me. And that is why I do the podcast, because I've had so many people reach out to me in corporate world who are dealing with just really shitty situations, and they don't know how to deal with them. And I just have always been that person who, you know, sits in a room with executives and I'm like, I don't think this is right. Or people text and say, you know, are you going to say something? So it's kind of
so I would just sum that up as, you are the leader. So you've led that, and you've been able to do that because you've got it. And that's also something you can pass down, which is why people come to you.
Absolutely.
And that is a great thing for, it's just understanding that. And I've had a lot of clients where speaking out, and we talk about speaking out like that's the work, but that's not the work. That's just the outcome that you get when you can speak out.
Absolutely.
I'm investing in a coach at the moment that's called me out. So I talk with coaching. The MMA coaching is mindset, movement and alignment. And I think that I'm creating unstoppable people. And then I drop into what I call a ring with a coach, and she turns me around, pulls my pants down and spanks my ass. And I'm like, I can do a few things. I can tap out and say, no, I don't want to work with you. I can submit into a package, which is what this is the terminology that I use. I can wriggle out of here, or if I was unstoppable, I could have just walked away. And that work in finding that work is sometimes not speaking out. It's sometimes in self-worth, and the fear is always there. But in some scenarios I can sit, like if I was sending a lift, I can sit in a room with people and 20 people can challenge me on it. And I can all day long, it doesn't bother me at all.
Right.
Whereas with coaching, you're buying me. So there was some blocks on that. And that's what I've worked through. And it's funny that the work is, it was for me, it was still in self-worth, how I saw myself. It was still in a value of an unstoppable belief, which someone that was selling the unstoppable you, but I have to do the work to be able to pass it down.
Right.
And with you, there was an innate natural thing that you could pass down, so you could give fruit to people in that. And I think it leads me on again to some of the things we talked about. This is working nice, you know, on the course correct. We talked about course correct.
Sure, yeah.
Changing that where you're going from. And I wanted to sort of pick into, within the book, to have written it, you would have to have done some of work. You know, even physically writing the book would have been difficult, and you would have had to break through in some of those components. So in terms of course correcting, what's some of the stuff that you've done in you course correcting to being where you are now, and almost maybe talk to stuff that you've got to do to get where you've got to get to? Because there's writing the book, which is halfway, and there's selling the book, which is another halfway. And there's all these components of other stuff. So in terms of
that great question. You know, this is a common theme also in addition to the speaking out is that course correction. And it's different for everybody, and there are many different things to do to course correct. But yeah, in writing the book, I often tell the story of how it took me 3 years to write three chapters of this book, because I was waiting for motivation, I was waiting for inspiration, and I was just, you know, chugging along, and I was miserable. And it was only when I really found discipline, which just is so odd for me, because I think creative people just, you know, oh, discipline, ugh, you know, what's, you know, but it's so true that discipline really helped me. I was reading a book by Lauren Graham. She's an actress from, you might know her from Parenthood or The Gilmore Girls. She wrote a book called Talking as Fast as I Can. And I was listening to this book on a long trip, and she was mentioning how she had this block. It wasn't really writer's block. It was motivational block. And so she started using this timer technique, the Pomodoro technique, which is this idea that you chunk things into smaller time frames and you set a timer and you only focus on that for that time, even if it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And that's how I had to course correct my mindset of, I'm not inspired to write. I'm not motivated to write. I had to get disciplined. So every morning I would get up at 5 a.m. I would set my timer for half an hour and I would just write. And even if I didn't write in my book, I might write journal. I might, you know, do social media articles, but I had to write every day for that period of time. And eventually it only took a few more months and I finished the book and about 6 months in, I was in publishing. So that is taking action is such an important thing, because we get caught up in our mindset, our excuses, our procrastination, our fear, whatever it is, our voices in our head start making up excuses or reasons why we don't do things. We overplan. I'm an overplan, horrible overplanner. And it's as soon as we start to take physical action and get into that discipline, the brain changes much faster than if we just start, you know, continue to dwell on things and while I'm waiting for motivation. So that is has been a big part of me getting to where I am. But it's also a part of where I want to be. You know, you asked about where I want to go. My goal this year, my one top 100% goal this year is my self-care, my health, because last year was kind of a shit show and for everybody, right? I mean, it was up and down. I had some good moments, but it was tough. I moved a whole house. So that was on top of everything else. I was packing and the stress was so high and I didn't take care of myself. You know, I gained weight and I don't have weight to gain. So it's health this year. And it's a hard thing because every morning I get up and the voices start, you know, it's cold out, you're tired, you're behind on stuff. And I have to literally just stand up and physically move and just walk to where my shoes are, put my walking shoes on and go out the door and stop the thinking, because the thinking will prevent me almost every time. So that is my course correction this year.
This is massive stuff. And this is gorgeous, because it moved on. My next thing was about getting shit done and grit. And this for me, like the habits on gardening. So where I see this MMA, this mindset movement alignment, it's a certain truth. And I'm looking into this. I'm going to mess it up now. My wife will go mad. Gattini, the mass formula, there's a style of maths and it's got this shape. And there's principles in this maths that's in everything in life. And these formulas, so this MMA for me, whether I'm talking about boxing, engineering or gardening, that you've got to have habits. Like, how many punches did Mike Tyson make to get to Mike Tyson? And they think it's a few at the end, but it's got nothing to do with that. It's that repetition of the stuff. And I use, like, we joke about virginity, like people when they say you pop your cherry and you say you make a breakthrough, it's this point of pop. That in movement that you get up in the morning and you've got all of this resistance to going for a run or going for a walk or getting your shoes ready and packing your stuff for the next day. And the work is in stepping into that work, and there's no shortcutting around it. And coaching's, it's funny, my wife was on a call with my sister. She does accountability coaching for my sister. And she was doing it for me, but we've come away from it. And I remember afterwards, I pulled her to one side and said, can we hook that back up again? Because sometimes, especially my wife, having someone like, did you do what you said you was going to do? Oh.
I just asked somebody the other day about, you know, I need an accountability coach. And there are people like that out there, but that is me. I know what to do. I know what I have to do. It's just doing it and being accountable for it.
The problem with it is I try and separate that with people. When I talk about coming into a session, I bring them to the mat, which is my MMA thing. And in it, I get to a position where they've either got to tap out and say, I don't want to go there. they've got a wriggle out, which means I'm not a good enough coach, or they've got a run, or they submit into the work. And it's the same. I have the same at the start of every conversation about coming into coaching. No one wants to pay for coaching because they see it as the coaching until they see what the work is. So if someone could have said to you when you was younger, and I had this with a client that went back, speaking out was an issue from something that happened through teenage years. And from a point of, let's say, 14, he no longer spoke out effectively and then took that into his career. So one of the reasons he was in there was because of issues with the career. And actually, when you work it down, it's got nothing to do with that. It's got nothing to do with that. He didn't say that at the time, and he carried on struggling. He didn't say that at the time. And then you find the work isn't actually speaking out. It's why he didn't say what he said and got into a situation. And if you could speak on that, what it's giving you to be able to speak out and then sell that to someone else, there's more power in that.
Well, it's powerful because I feel like I'm helping people, because I understand there's so many people that can't speak out, and it is a lot. I mean, I say that I'm not, that I do have fear, but that's what courage is. Courage is moving through the fear. Yes. And it is getting people to a point where they can do that. Whatever speaking out is, not everybody speaks out in a way that I speak out, but sometimes it's just communicating with your partner or asking for a raise. You know, people, it's a very common thing that people just, you know, I don't want to, you know, make trouble, or it's a heel, maybe they'll say no, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of work that has to be done about that. And the getting shit done is really, it's almost the same thing as the action, the course correcting. It really is, because that is what you need to do. You need to form those habits and you need to have that discipline. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's such a journey to get to that point. Now I will say too, you know, talking about the getting shit done part, cause I do joke about that I'm what I think I would call myself, the chief executive of getting shit done. But you know, there's a downside to that too, and it kind of plays into finding your voice, right? The downside is that when you're that person who gets shit done, sometimes people take advantage of that, right? They expect it, and then you can get overwhelmed, and then you get more. And it's not even an egregious thing that people do. They just give you more things because, oh, you're the getter of shit done, and then you get more roles at your job, or you take on more roles at home. And then you become overwhelmed, and then sometimes that pushes us back to where we don't speak out, because we want to be that person. We want to be the person that you rely on, and that I am the getter of shit done. But yet I have to, you know, I feel guilty when I say no to people. Yeah. And I'm not one of those nurturey, like I never say no people. I say no a lot, but I like being the person that people think, oh, let me go to Beth. She's the one, she'll figure this out. She'll get it done. But then when that happens a lot and you get more and more roles, it becomes difficult. And then the guilt sets in, and then the stress, and then it's just this whole vicious circle of,
I think,
being able to stand up for yourself, even, you know, when you are the person that speaks up to say, hey, no.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to, there's like a cousin link between the power in stepping up and into something. And there's also the power in stepping up. So in mindset, boundaries is a big part of what I do. And it's almost the same thing that's built on self-worth, that you'll step in and do something and say something and get something done because you value yourself. And you'll step up and you'll say no because you value yourself. And I link both of them with alignment, that if you stood up and said no because it would allow you more time to help other people better, then you're standing up for the right reason. And if you step into getting fit, I mean, I for a while struggled, and now I'm getting movement on dropping weight and getting fit, because to me, it wasn't about, I did a white collar boxing event, and it was funny. It had nothing to do with doing the white collar boxing event. It was about me being and stepping into those fears, like with clients that said, and I remember someone saying that when you want to do the white collar, I used to say to clients, pick a dream that makes you want to scream mummy. Like, it's so scary. And I remember saying, like, you know, do you do white collar? I remember thinking, like, mummy, mummy. And I'm thinking, well, I'm here now. This is it. Would I like to do it? And I've boxed on and off training-wise for years. Would I like to do it? Yeah. So it's something I would like to do. It's available. Am I going to do it? And it's exactly the same as what, exactly the same conversation I had when I employed this coach was, well, are you going to do it? And this is where we surrender into the work. So I invested in the coach. I said yes to the white collar. And was it difficult? Did I want to scream mummy? And I came second. I got my thingy. I came second in the boxing. I didn't get knocked out, but I lost on points. But it was that alignment to almost had nothing to do with the fight and winning or losing.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what a good coach does. And I'm sure that's what you do too, right? Don't you find that it's not really about, I think people have this is why I think people, you mentioned how people don't want to invest in coaching. And I was one of those people a year ago. I thought, what do I need a coach for? I got my shit together. And then I did. And I was like, holy heck, whoa. And it, because I thought I had this misconception that coaching was just about, you know, somebody who's good, like a therapist, like, you know, hey, and so part, that is part of it, but it was more when one of my coaches, her name is Heidi Medina, and she would just challenge me on things. I'm to the point of like, I'm like, what are you, stop. Yeah. But I needed that so much. And afterwards I was like, I felt free. I felt, oh, wow. I needed somebody to get in my face and say, no, let's I'm going to challenge you on that. I want you to think about that further. Yeah. No, that's not really what's going on. Let's get to what's really going on. And
energy and emotion. And there's either energy, like you say, like, who are you to get in my face? Like, what? Who are you to, like, there's anger and there's frustration with being challenged. And it's exactly the same as if we was on the mat doing MMA,
right?
Fighting,
but it's inner, right? A lot of that's inner anger. It's not
with these, and you want to wiggle out of it, and it's just like holding up a mirror, and coming at every angle, it's emotion, you know, or it's like, you know, understanding what's been holding you back. Sometimes it's like really upsetting, and I've found it with what the work I've done now, like thinking I'd unpacked a lot of baggage. And then suddenly I'm moving around and I can't get around because I'm still carrying this baggage and she's spanking me. Literally. I'm like,
I'm saying,
all right. I'll submit into offloading and doing this sort of stuff. And it's just, it's interesting. And I think the other thing that we said we would move into and the visualization and manifestation is you've got to have that insight of where you want to go and align to it, because the book, if you looked at the work in writing those paragraphs and writing those things and didn't align to becoming the woman that writes the book, you would
100%. Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I'm a big law of attraction, universal law of attraction believer. I visualize, I have vision boards galore. I journal. But I didn't start that journey to manifest. I started that journey because a friend of mine dragged me to a vision board workshop, and it was this wonderful, her name's Mamie Brown. She's on LinkedIn. And she just really was vibrant, and it was her message about how if we reframe our thoughts into something more positive, our life can change. So a lot of people, especially in my world of the podcast, say, I hate my job sucks, my boss sucks. And if you keep saying that and thinking that and believing it, it's going to happen. You're going to always, that's what the law of attraction says. You're going to attract a shitty boss, a crappy work environment. But if you reframe that and start visualizing what is your good job, I've got a great job, I'm visualizing, I'm thinking about, I'm journaling about my great boss and the culture, then you'll attract that. And I wasn't even in this when I first became aware of this law of attraction to manifest a book. I just wanted to not be a bitter person because I was unhappy with my job. I was overwhelmed, in chaos, stressed out. And I found myself every day at work in a conference room with all of my other peers. Like we'd sit before a meeting for 5 minutes, just complaining. And I recognized it. There was an inner part of me that recognized this, but I still did it because it's, you know, it's habit, right? You just continue. It's something.
You go along with the flow, don't you?
Yeah, you go with the flow. And when I went to this workshop and I started hearing these messages, I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this just so I'm not a bitter person. It wasn't about to manifest my dreams and get a house with a pool and move to the state of Virginia where the winters are not ungodly cold. It was just to be a better person. And with that, things changed. So I do use the law of attraction. I do visualize. And one of the things that I visualized very early on was opening my box of books. That was like a big thing. I'm getting chills even just thinking about it right now. So I would just, kind of feel, the doorbell rings and it's the delivery person dropping off a box, and I pull it inside and I open it, and there's my box of books. I'm a published author with a physical book that I wrote in my, even if it's crappy, it's a book that I wrote and I finished it. So, and then it happened, right? I finished my book. I got disciplined because that's a part of it. Action is a part of, for me, the law of attraction. It's not just about, I'm going to think about it and it's going to happen. I can't become a best-selling author if I don't actually write, if I don't actually physically write. And that's, I think, where a lot of people maybe get lost. But then it happened, and I opened my books, and it was a glorious moment. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of the law of attraction and manifesting. And I continue to do that. It's always a struggle because when, you're stressed, it's easy to go negative. But I'm aware, and, we just have to keep working on it and keep trying to be better. And so now this year, as I mentioned before, health, boom, got to visualize myself out there running.
I think I always have an issue with me bringing things down to gutter level. But I'm going to go here that I think you've got to pick your pawn. And it's a bit like sex and porn. If you pick the right porn, you get movement from a man anyway. And I think it's the same with the goals, that when you align that, like for you, that book, you can feel that there's a certain energy of flow that comes through, like a stimulation. And that when you connect and align with it, the reason I think people don't move and take action is they don't really connect and align to something powerful. It might be that I want to write a book like Beth. Well, that's not you. That's being like Beth, and it might be you want to write a book, but when I find, and this is where alignment comes in with purpose, like mine's in creativity, so I can work in the lift industry in a creative state and way, and or do jobs that I know I've got to do to get back into a creative space and spend time like I am now coaching. So it's all aligned to be able to do that. And it comes back down, I think, to having that visual, that strong finding your pawn, of life, that you've got that strong desire.
And
if you connect back to it every time, that's where you find the movement again. So I do the same with working out. It's got easier now because I've almost cut through that need to do it because it just gets done. But if I do struggle, I find that I'll just watch some motivational boxing videos. And it always comes back down. I don't know why with training it comes back down to the boxing side of stuff motivates me. But that's my pull. That's what gets me going. And I'll go for a run when I watch it. So,
yeah. No, that's great. I think everybody needs to have, that everybody gets to that point. I do. I used to have a podcast about the law of attraction, but it is still something that I get challenged with, keeping that right mindset. So I have a list of things that I go to if I'm starting to feel, like I've lost it. But to your point, I totally agree. I mean, if you feel like you're constantly going against the flow, you're swimming upstream, then I challenge everybody, encourage everybody to evaluate, what it is that you're pursuing. Are you pursuing it in the right way? Or is it even, something that, is your passion? Because when you are aligned with your passion, it's effortless. That's the thing that they always say, what could you do for a long time and just lose track of time and you don't even know? And for me, that's writing, and it's podcasting, a jigsaw puzzle. Not that I pursuing a career in jigsaw puzzles, but I could do a jigsaw puzzle for hours and I don't even know what's going on around me. So if you're pursuing something and it's not flowing, then it's back to that course correction. What is it? Is it really that you're not aligned with your passion, or are you not aligned with how to get to your passion? And do you need to course correct? And sometimes I feel like I get course corrected by, the universe. I feel like stuff happens and it feels like it's negative and horrible. And I think, oh man, you know, this is, you know, I've been trying, I've been visualizing, I've been, and then I realize, oh no, this is just the universe slapping me in the face and saying, you know, don't get too complacent. I'm working on it. You know that what your direction is, and boom, you know, then whoop.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that come up there, because finding the work is the work. And like I said from the start, bacon wasn't the work. It's what's in it. So some of those jobs that you find, it's the same as me going to a lift and someone saying, oh, the lift's a piece of shit. And then you look into it and it's like, oh, it's something to do with the landing doors. And then you look into it and it's not the landing doors, it's the car door, but the car goes through every landing. So they think it's the... And it's not even the car doors. There's something else. It's the sensor on the car doors. And you drill down into where the actual work is. And it's interesting with coaching, when people come to a session, that work isn't in where they think it is. That's just an outcome.
All the time. Every time, Matt. Every single time. When they come, it's not what you think it is.
Yeah. And coming back to that alignment as well, when you said it's not even in the writing, because that's just what your hand's doing. It's in the creativity.
True.
And that's where, when you look at purpose, it's like a magnet behind a piece of paper that's moving something. I quite like writing and art and property development and, you know, everything. Like I say, the conversations in coaching, I joke, I don't care. And it's something that I joke with clients about, but I wouldn't be a good coach if I cared, because I wouldn't ask Beth that uncomfortable situation, which my mum wouldn't do.
Right.
She might upset Beth. You are, Beth. Is everything all right?
Exactly. Right.
Happy, Beth. Is that tea nice? Have a bit of your tea. Let's wait for your tea.
Do you need to be soothed? Let me sing you a lullaby. No.
You could make a great counselor, but that's not what I am. So it's that, you know, it's that alignment really with that core purpose. And it, like I say, it's in creativity, the lights around the door. You know, that you can see within what you do and the art, what you do and the book covers and that, there's creativity in that. And writing's a form of.
Absolutely. And creativity, it's definitely one of my core qualities. And I think people think that, you know, they almost feel like it's a selfish thing. Like, you know, why should I need to do something for others. And the thing is that even it's back to that self-care. Like I'm being creative for selfish reasons, because I like to do it. I like the feeling of creating something. It's a very, self-centered or selfish feeling of creating something. But I know that I what I create may help someone or inspire someone or, make them, you know, motivated to do something. I mean, even with the writing, I've had so many people ask me for help. I'm helping my uncle write a very difficult book. People have said I've inspired them to write just because I went through the process, and I wasn't even doing it because I want to inspire people to write. I just wanted to create this thing that I thought needed to be created. And it's just the ancillary effects of the creativity that are, I'm not saying that I don't, have altruistic motives, but, you know, a lot of them are selfish that I just like.
Yeah, I mean, some people, again, I would sort of be sniffing around that help, because it seems like that even the concept of the book is you helping others, because you're passing down and you're leading, and it was more powerful because you were standing up for others. So I would say that there's help in purpose for you more so than other people, because although there's creativity in it, a lot of this book is geared around you supporting a team that were struggling.
Yeah.
And that you as that voice for those people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, even that in itself, it is a selfish thing, because it did make me feel good, but we shouldn't be ashamed to feel good about what we do, that it makes us feel good. We shouldn't feel like that's a bad thing. If it's serving a greater purpose as well. But yeah, it was a good feeling. It was, I felt like this book was a voice in itself, a voice of the people bringing their story out of, because there's a lot of self-help books out there and they're great. I love them. You know, Who Moved My Cheese? They're the great books, but they're all about how you, the person, you know, deal with this horrible situation. It's not about the voice from the people. It's more about, you know, hey, I'm going to tell you how to deal with these crappy decisions that are happening. And I wanted a book that was like, no, this is a decision that shouldn't have happened. And the way it was executed shouldn't have happened. And I wanted to bring that story because it's from the people. So, but yeah, it certainly did make me feel good. And I feel like I hope I helped.
So I think that we're good with the four things we was going to chat around.
Yeah, this is fun. And by the way, I love your backdrop. I love your yes. sunflowers. Are those real?
No.
No. I still have to get my bacon backdrop, Matt. I know you mentioned that last time,
I can get creative and do some sketches for you if you want. Pinterest. We'll have to get a Pinterest board going.
There you go. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That does look like a Pinterest board. I'm having a bookshelf built in my own house. I have a dream of a wall of books like my parents had. And so I'm getting that done. So you're inspiring me here with your decor.
So what would you say if we had to just pick up, and I know speaking out is a component, but just to summarize, in some of the components, softwares and systems that that you can bring to the table that people can maybe sort of think and visualize into how they can then move on to what they want to do and incorporate them to getting where they want to get to. That makes sense.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think so right now I'm really focused on the action part of it. So I think that's a great message for people to start off this new year is, 2021, wherever we are in 2021 right now, is to really just stop overthinking and stop beating yourself up and just start taking action. Because I really do believe that when we physically take action whether that's taking a walk or doing a spreadsheet or building a bookshelf or whatever it is that you have been putting off that you know is going to make you feel better, do it. Just stand up and do it. And if that involves, physical activity, then absolutely. Keep working on it, whatever it is. There's so many things that people are struggling with and challenged with. And, as a coach, there are many different it's a whole dynamic, multifaceted dynamic of what's going on. So action inspires change. And that's my mantra for the year. So I think that would be my message is just, I hate to quote Nike, but just do it. Just get out there and do it. And your mental state and your spiritual state will feel so much better for that.
Yeah. And I think coming back to what you said, and again, find your pawn is opening the books. It's not about the task. I remember someone talking about seeing the donut you're eating and that long-term effect of another stone on you.
Yeah.
And seeing that the action now, not eating the donut is a stone less, and aligning that those paragraphs align to opening a box of books.
Well, right. And it's also stopping that thought process. And I did this just the other day, Matt. I was in the grocery store and my husband got some ice cream and it was late at night and I wasn't really hungry, but I got some ice cream anyway. And I was literally almost to the checkout and I said no. And I just stopped my thinking because my thinking was, it'll taste good and it'll feel good. And I'm kind of stressed out right now. And I wheeled my cart. I think my husband thought I was crazy. I wheeled my cart. I just actioned it. I shut the mm-hmm. thinking off because sometimes we have to do that. And I put the thing back in the refrigerator. So that's, to your donut, it's thinking about what are the repercussions. And then it's also physically just stop the thinking and just put it down.
Yeah, I did exactly
which is hard, but...
So we've got in a habit at the moment with Ellie, when she finishes school, we generally will go and get a coffee and we usually link it with getting whatever we need to shop to get dinner and come back. But we go and take a coffee and sit at the beach. And it's a nice thing that we've been doing. Yeah. So we go through Starbucks and there's a guy there that I think he must know my voice because I use it so much. And so we order our drinks and then he says, are we going to give you half price cakes? You want half price cakes? And I was doing this stuff with me and I was like, no, I'm all right. And Ellie said, I'll have a lemon something. And he says, are you sure, Matt? And as I moved off, I could feel myself going, and I'll have a caramel shortbread. And I drove off and so I ran to Ellie and I looked at her as if, because she's meant to be my accountability coach. And she was like, what? And I was like, and I remember going around there and we went and we had it. And then the next day, I think we went around and he'd done the same thing and I told him off. And she got one and I didn't. But it was that catching yourself. And this is the consciousness.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the ice cream just goes in. And yeah. it's just orders, and someone's just got to put the ice cream in. And this is where this level of flow comes in, that if we stay unconscious, that we'll just go wherever those negative or positive influences around us, or get that level of consciousness.
And Matt, we didn't even touch mindfulness. That we'll have to do that at another time.
But your podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Cheers for coming on, Beth. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you. I've had a great time, and you're a great host. You're a great coach and a great host.
So you're going to send me the links, and we'll put them in the bottom where people can check out your stuff.
Absolutely.
And they can come and see your book and your podcast.
Yeah,
And you've got some books coming up as well, haven't you?
I'm working on my first novel right now. It's called, well, I should say first. I have probably three of them in a drawer from way back in the 90s. It's called Aunt Franny and the She Shed Itch. It's a little comedy romance, modern fiction kind of a thing. But I'll be putting more about that out on social media in the months to come. But still working on it.
Cheers, Beth. Listen, you have a good weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. You too. Bye now. Bye.